Hi, my name's Carmen. I'm an alcoholic. It's fucking bizarre to be on mic. There's a lot of swearing in my story. There's a lot of God. I didn't hear a yay on that one. I'm going to start getting my purse out of the way. I stand because it keeps me honest. It keeps me accountable because it's not about me. It's not about carrying my message, about carrying the message. So my sobriety date is January 13th, 2005. I have 11 years and some change. I was 32 when I got sober, and I'm 44 now. I blame my birthday for getting me sober. My best group of girlfriends back home. I was raised in Wisconsin, although I was born down at Stanford, so I'm a California native, and I did eventually come back here. But being raised in Wisconsin, I went back. I moved out to the Bay in 2002, convinced that my problem was my parents. My mom was a crackhead. My dad's a homeless, die-in-the-gutter alcoholic. My sister likes to shoot crystal meth with dirty rigs. They're the fucking problem. I got through college. I got a black belt in Kung Fu. Hi-ya. I ran a multi-million dollar business. It was a brewing company. It was great. I had great big vats of beer whenever I wanted it. That was part of my actual like management and my payroll, was that I had as much beer as I wanted. I could take as much beer as I wanted to home. I could drink as much beer as I wanted to. And then free food, so it was mostly just the beer. So it was external things. So when I moved out to San Francisco in 2002, I just thought that I'd arrived, even though it was like right after the dot-com crash and people were like, why did you move to San Francisco? I'm like, I have a dream. I had graduated and I was gonna be the next great American writer. Instead, I became a waitress and I did fine dining for a little while, and that's where I discovered the scene, the club scene, the dance scene, the DJ scene, the cocaine scene, the let's go party all night long scene, the end up DNA, the mezzanine, all of it. The underground parties way out in the fucking Bayview with the thing and the stuff and the drugs and the, I'm like, where am I? I'm in a limo. Who are you? This is great. I'm from Wisconsin. I'm just this innocent farm girl. How am I here at, I remember being at an after bar that ended up at the end of, that ended up being at Fucking Machines warehouse in Kink before it was Kink. And I was like, I don't care, I'm smoking some crystal meth over here. This is great. And, you know, being up for days on end. And so I'd come out to San Francisco really because this was home and I knew it. And I knew I was going to find myself here. And I remember my best friend saying to me, you know, Carmen, you're not the homecoming queen. And just because you didn't get voted onto prom court. And, you know, these people don't, they're not your friends, you know. And it was just in one ear and out the other. But I kind of knew it. I knew it inside. I knew that there was a problem. I'd always known somewhere inside that there was a problem, you know. But like I said, I thought that it was external, that it was people, places, and things. It wasn't me. You know, if I could just cut this head off and put it on a different body, maybe that would be okay. You know, I had odd ideas about what was wrong with me. I didn't have this conception that I had alcoholism. I certainly didn't know anything about recovery. I didn't know anything about people who were sober. I wasn't raised by those types of people. They didn't have that kind of... My mom warned me once. She said, you should be careful about alcohol. Your father's an alcoholic. And we're like, oh, so that's why he wets the bed and lights things on fire. And said that thing to my date that one time. That was really not cool to say, Dad, don't do that. So I thought, as long as I'm not like my dad, right? And I actually didn't like getting drunk. I know that's crazy. The allergy for me was really, really fast. I didn't have my first drink until I was 17, and it was LSD, and he was hot. And I was like, oh, I'll take it. You're really cute, and you're going off to the Gulf War. Okay, let's do this. LSD was, that was a great trip, but the rest of my trips weren't so much. And then shortly thereafter, I had my first drunk. And I look at young people in AA and in recovery, and I'm so blown away by that. You know, I have a couple of sponsees who didn't ever have a legal drink, you know. I have a sponsee that I get to meet with tomorrow and do a fifth step. And it's the third time we've done a fifth step. And she's 22. She got sober when she was 19. And it just blows my mind. I had a full ride to college when I was 18. And I got drunk at college. So I was 18 when I first really had, like, my first big alcoholic experience. And by the time I was 19, I was homeless smoking crack in Miami, Florida. Full ride to college, homeless smoking crack. The disease progresses quickly. But I didn't know what I had. I just had this idea that as long as I wasn't doing drugs, it'd be okay. So, yeah, you know, pulled myself up by the bootstraps. I got this job. I put myself through school. And it was them. It was the family. It was Dad spare changing for money outside the bar so that he could, you know, come and drink. It was my mom showing up at my house at 5 in the morning, having stolen all the money from her job so she could smoke crack. It was my sister, who was pregnant, drinking at the bar. I was, all of those things was not me. So when I came to San Francisco, I didn't have any responsibility and have anyone to take care of. And, I fell into the scene really, really fast. I moved out here when I was 29, and I got sober when I was 32. So it was just like that. My first sponsor used to tell me that I had an allergy to alcohol and I would break out into drugs. And that made sense to me. Because my first meeting was a Cocaine Anonymous meeting, and I didn't like any of you, and I hated the speaker share, and fuck, you got to do a lot more drugs than I did, and that's not fair. You know? My problem wasn't drugs, my problem was I didn't have enough money to do the kind of drugs I wanted to do. Which is indicative of a problem, you know. But the guy that was at the meeting looked at me and said, come up front, because I was sitting way in the back. So I came up front, I sat up front and listened to the speaker share, and then they did, like, chips, and like, go get a newcomer chip. And I went and got a newcomer chip. And the guy that gave me that chip gave me a chip a year later at All Groups, and I got a year. I never saw him again. I only saw him those two times, at that first meeting I went to, at that meeting where I got my 1 year. And he said, are you going to come back? And I was like, no. I was like, I don't think so. It took too many buses to get out here. Fuck, if I'm going to go to meetings in the inner sunset, I live in the Mission. Fuck that. And he's like, oh, you live in the Mission? That's great. You should go to High Noon. Well, where's that at? 19th and Dolores. And I knew where it was. I knew where it was because 2 days before I'd been sitting up in Dolores Park looking out over the city wondering what the fuck I was going to do. My friends had run an intervention on me. Granted, they didn't know. Like, they were kind of normies. They still kind of are normies. I can't really diagnose anyone else's alcoholism but my own, right? So for my 32nd birthday, I'd gone back to Wisconsin to celebrate with my friends who wanted me to come home. Well, they wanted me to come home because they wanted to, like, sit me down and have a good talk. Carmen, you really shouldn't do these drugs anymore. And they did it at the bar that I used to run. So that was really an interesting thing, you know, because they didn't understand that once I had alcohol in my system, it did not matter. Right? It didn't matter who you were. I was going to fuck your boyfriend. It didn't matter that your purse was not really my purse. I was going to borrow your money, you know, or your drugs, or whatever it was that you had that I wanted. My friends didn't understand that I had an allergy, and that when that allergy got, you know, lit up, that I would do anything. You know, there was no repercussions. I wasn't the type of drinker who was a blackout drinker. I wish I was. Sometimes I don't want to remember the things I did when I was drinking. But I was, at the end, the type of person who started to have rules about my drinking. I had a 3-beer rule, and I had a 2-beer rule, and I had a 1-beer rule. Because I knew if I had 3 beers, I was calling the dealer. So I shouldn't have any more than 2 beers. But if I had 2 beers, I usually had 3. So then I had a 1-beer rule, and then I had a 0.5-beer rule, and then I had don't taste any of the beer rule. And it was like, don't think about the beer rule. So when my first sponsor told me that, she was like, you have an allergy to alcohol, you break out into drugs. I'm like, I got it. So Yeah, that guy had told me about High Noon, and I had been sitting up on that hill, and I was so mortified and so ashamed that my friends had done this intervention, and I didn't want to go back to Wisconsin, and I didn't want to admit complete defeat, but I knew that I was defeated, right? You know, while I was up in that hill, I wasn't up there because I was trying to be, like, all soul-searching and anything. I was up there because I was meeting somebody who was going to film... I can't believe I'm saying this on mic. Who was going to film me for some porn. And it wasn't your traditional porn, I guess. It was fetish porn. apparently, I had nice feet. And, yeah, that's what I was doing up in Dolores Park. I was walking around in platform sandals having someone film my feet. And I saw that meeting, and there were a bunch of people smoking cigarettes outside of it. So when I went to that CA meeting, after having spent my porn money on drugs, and completely having demoralized myself, I knew exactly where it was, 19th and Dolores. The funny thing is, I actually work for people that run that building now. It's now private children's day school. And I'm a private professional nanny, and I've been a nanny for the last 10 years. hopefully my employers won't be listening to me talk about foot porn and cocaine anytime soon. I just got a new job recently. Really, I'm a very nice person, I swear. So I went to that first meeting, and I sat somewhere in the middle of the room. And I don't remember much, but I remember I was scared. And I remember I raised my hand and I said I was an alcoholic and an addict. Because I figured it was an AA meeting, I should say I was an alcoholic. And this woman came up to me afterwards and she said, "Hey, how you doing?" And she was all like bright and shiny and happy and bubbly and like her hair was nice. And I was like, "I'm fine." And I burst into tears. And she said, "You want to come have a cup of coffee?" And I was like, "I don't have any money." And she says, "Don't worry about that, I'll buy it for you." So we went to Dolores Park Cafe, and she let me talk to her for a long time. I was still high. She made me change my tape, like, a couple days later. She's like, "You were still high." I was like, okay. And I was desperate, you know. I was about to be homeless again. I'd lost my job. I had been fired from some jobs. I didn't have anything left. And the thought of being homeless again, you know, after I'd been homeless when I was 19, scared the living crap out of me, you know. So that got me in that state of desperation that it talks about, you know, that jumping off point. I was definitely there. So what she suggested is that I meet her later that night in another meeting. She took me up to Sesame Step, and it's up in Noe Valley, and it was a big-ass meeting, and I was scared. I was so scared. We were right up front. Like, right up front. You know, it was the type of meeting where people came, like, an hour before the meeting to save seats. And my sponsor was one of those people. But to this day, I can still remember that first row and remember the faces there. Harry McMenamin. Bob. Bob! Bob just got 14 years. Cy. Robert. Kirk. I mean, I can see all of them. Lauren, Rebecca, Trisha, and the clock at the other side of the room, and all of you in between me and the door. And that was, I think, the closest I ever came to wanting to leave AA. I was so scared. I was so scared of you. I was so terrified of you. Now, if I didn't know about her, like later on I heard someone say, if it was called Self-Centered Fear Anonymous, I wouldn't have come. I was like, oh my God, that was totally it. That's it to this day. I'm still really... and still am a really fearful person. I get scared really easily, and I would really push that down. I was afraid that if I got up to leave that meeting, that you would tackle me. Like, I don't know where I got this notion, but you guys were going to tackle me. And so I had to sit still, but it was so hard to sit still and just, like, literally just sit on my hands. And then afterwards, my sponsor, who had asked me, "So do you want me to be your sponsor?" And I was like, "Sure." No idea. No idea what that meant. It says, "Go to the literature table and get a big book." And I was like, I don't have any money. I can't buy a book right now. She said, "Don't worry about it. You'll work something out." So I went up to the literature person and I asked for a big book and they said, sure. And I was like, thanks. And then my sponsor met with me the next day and we went up to Dolores Park and at the same fucking picnic table. The guy had filmed me in fucking heels. We read the first step. And we read the book. And we started reading that book. And one of my favorite parts in that book is the part in Bill's story where he talks about, you know, the cold, small beer. You know, I used to have that over my desk at the brewery next to beer is not just for breakfast anymore. And I was reading that, and I remember thinking, how did they know that that was over my desk in my office? How did they know that that little dongle was over my desk in my office? And because there's so many of us, because we're just everywhere. And I'm really grateful for that. I've got to do a lot of traveling and sobriety, and I've got to do a lot of different things. But basically, I got to do all those things because I got a really solid foundation. I had that gift of desperation. And I am afraid of you, so I want to make sure that you're happy, which means I'm a people pleaser. And I really wanted to please my sponsor, you know. So I took all of her suggestions. I did stuff that I, to this day, am still kind of amazed. I took the first three commitments that I got. So I was a greeter, and a coffee maker, all at high noon. And she told me a couple of things. Get to the meeting 15 minutes early, stay 15 minutes late. Sit up front or as close to the secretary as possible. It helps if you get there 15 minutes early, you'll get a spot to sit. Have three commitments at all times, and when it's appropriate, have three sponsees. Go to the business meetings of the meetings that you have commitments at. Still to this day, I'm like, it's a business meeting. They're great. I always can tell when I'm spiritually activated. I'm like, oh, I'm okay at this business meeting. I really don't care what this person is doing over there with the, you know, the coffee making. Let's set the table here instead. Watch every alcoholic in the room get really upset. What else did she say? Oh, go to at least five meetings a week. And actually, for my first year, I probably went to two or three. You know, I was just rocked. I was really rocked, and I needed so much help. And I just didn't know. I didn't know at all what to do. I went to a lot of High Noon. That was my home group for a long time until I got a job that, you know, I think that's what happens a lot of times, the new meetings. It's like, you get a job, and you don't go to those meetings anymore. But I'm very fond of that meeting when I was at 19th and Dolores and then over in Julian. A lot of commitments there. I started sponsoring pretty soon. I hadn't gotten all the way through the steps. My sponsor said, you're ready when you're asked. And I was like, great, I just got asked. I don't know how to do this. And she was like, you just stay a step ahead of your sponsee. I've always had sponsees since that point. You know what, I'm not a GSR. Love you guys, you're doing a great job. It's not for me. but I've had a lot of success with sponsoring, and I'm super grateful for that. I've had sponsees in Paris. I've had sponsees at Burning Man. I've heard 10 steps out there. It's kind of interesting. I've only been to Burning Man sober, so that's also been a huge gift. Yeah, what else did she do? Oh, yeah, so we did the steps. I do the steps. I'm rather old-fashioned. I do them out of the big book. I start at the beginning, read the preface, read the forewords. I am that person who now gets emotional reading the forewords because they're moving. They're beautiful. It's amazing that 100 people got together, you know, in the 1930s and did this for us, you know. I go to conventions. I got to go to Worlds in Atlanta. I got to, I got to hear a fifth step on the left bank of the Seine. You know, I got to go back to school. I'm in grad school now, which is awesome. You know, and I get to live a pretty sober, happy life. You know, pretty sober. Like, I say that because sometimes I'm not emotionally sober. I can get upset about stuff. I'm still an alcoholic. It's progressive fatal disease. It wants me dead, you know. And it's sneaky sometimes. It will break out into other things, you know. sex, chocolate, shopping, Netflix. You know, I'm like, I'll have great ideas like, I don't want to go to that meeting. I'm going to watch Black Mirror. Yeah, sure, let's isolate and watch something really nihilistic. Sounds great. I'm depressed already. That's my disease. My disease wants to kind of, like, herd me off. And so, you know, when my sponsor told me those things, I found that it was incredibly helpful that I followed those suggestions and that I ended up following a lot of the suggestions. You know, we, like I said, we did the steps out of the big book. We did the steps as they came up. You know, I didn't have any problem admitting powerlessness. That was very easy. I didn't actually see the word God in the steps until I had about 5 or 6 months, and all of a sudden I was like, wow, there's a lot of God there. What's going on? And now I, like, talk to God all the time. I'm like, good morning, God. Hey, God, what's up? Thanks, God, for not having me drink today. Thanks for not having me smoke today. Thanks for not having me homeless yet today. Thanks for giving me a job today. Wow, God, that tree's pretty. I'm a fucking dork. I talk out loud to God. I'm like, thank God people are on their phones, because I'm over here, like, looking at clouds and shit, being like, wow, that's pretty. Yeah, because I can see now, because I go to the doctor, and I'm old, and I got bifocals. I was like, great, grad school. I pray on my knees in the morning. The first prayer that I was taught was please. It wasn't the serenity prayer. It wasn't the 11-step prayer. It wasn't the set-aside prayer. I love all those prayers. I say all of them, right? But the first one I taught was please. Please, God, keep me sober today. And at night to say please, to say thank you, God, for keeping me sober today. And then it went further from there, you know. I make my bed. I have an 11-step, you know. I have a higher power that I actually deeply feel connected to, that I got to cultivate by coming to meetings and by working the steps and by being a sponsor and by listening to my sponsor, by studying the traditions. For fuck's sake, it says it in the second tradition that, you know, a loving higher power, right? It's a loving higher power. My sponsor once said to me, she's like, yeah, you got a shitty God. You're like a really, like, mean, authoritative, kind of parentified God. You know, she's like, it's in the traditions. There's but one ultimate authority, a living God, as he may express himself. She's like, I don't talk to you that way. Nobody talks to you that way. You talk to yourself really poorly. Use that tradition. I was like, wow, okay. I get that. A loving higher power. So my version of a higher power sometimes is a 1970s sunken room with, like, white plush fur carpet and a fireplace, because I like to be warm and I want a lot of sun, and so, like, sometimes I'll just carry that image around with me. For a while it was the Muni. I know that sounds crazy, right? Because I had an accident and a friend gave me a Muni pass, and I was broke and didn't have any money, and I was in early recovery. 91 fucking days I had a horrendous accident and I had to walk with a cane for like 5 months, right? And somebody, some bitch at some fucking meeting, I was just like, she's like, be grateful. I'm like, fuck you, I have a cane, I can't pay rent, I can't work. She's like, how much money do you have? I was like, I have $8. And she's like, you'll be fine. What? She's like, why don't you go down to Dolores Park Cafe and get a coffee? Why don't you do something like sit in the sun and just enjoy the fact that you're alive and sober? I went to Cliff's Variety in the Castro, and I bought a tub of sequins and some glue. And then with the rest of the $5, I sat in front of Dolores Park Cafe, and I drank that coffee, and I put sequins all over my cane. So I had a glitter stick. I was like, a pin stick. I'm going to walk around with it. Right? A few months after that, I like to dance. Like I said, I was kind of a club kid. I liked to go out to the clubs and the parties and the warehouses and shit. And I was at Club 222, and it was a sober DJ, and I was dancing, and this guy saw me. He came up to me at a meeting a couple days later, and he's like, I'm going to be your friend. I was like, why? He's like, I saw you dancing out there with your bedazzled cane. I got to know who you are, you know? And he became my best friend. Yeah, and we were like thick as thieves for 2 years, and then he died. He died sober. He was hit by an ambulance after home group, coming home from the meeting on a scooter, and got hit by an ambulance. And I took his ashes out to Burning Man that year. That was my first time out. And then a year later, I found myself working at Burning Man. I'm like, how did that happen? What am I doing here? You're Larry. What's going on? You know? And all of those things that I did in those first 2 years, like all of the fellowship, all of the showing up, all of the taking suggestions. What do you mean, like, enjoy today? Like, be present in the moment. God's going to take care of you. Like, sit in the sun and have a cup of coffee. Like, all of those small little things came together, and they carried me, and they held me, and like that image of the Muni when my friend gave me the bus pass, he was just like, you can get to meetings now, I don't need this, I have a bike, you know. My food, I swear, for that first 6 months was just cookies and coffee at high noon, and Friday was the best because somebody who used to manage a Starbucks and would bring like the leftovers, and I was like, there's that scone I'm going to have, I'm going to take this one, and that's lunch, you know. All those things that I did, that fellowship, I'm still friends with so many of those people. You know, and I think about my best friend, and he and I had this talk once about faith, and he was just like, you have so much faith. And I was like, because I'm alive. If life was fair, I'd be dead. If life was fair, I'd be in the gutter. If life was fair, you know? It's not fair. Life hasn't been fair. I have been given so much. You know, I have been given a life beyond my wildest dreams. I've been given travel. I've been given art. Literally, I've been given pieces of art. I'm like, you just gave me that. Are you crazy? I like you. Okay, it's mine now. I'm keeping it, you know. I've gotten to have experiences and see things that I couldn't have even predicted I wanted to see or feel or do or be, you know. All because I came and stood up front as close to the secretary as possible. Why? Why does that work? I don't know. I quit smoking. I lost 100 pounds. Like, because, you know, when you quit smoking, you eat a lot of ice cream. I remember calling my sponsor. I'm like, there's 8 pints of Haagen-Dazs in the garbage. She's like, shut up and eat the ice cream. I'm like, okay. She's like, you can lose weight later. And I was like, okay. Go do H&I. I don't want to do H&I. Oh, you're going to do H&I at St. Mary's in the psych ward for underage kids.
Oh, God.
You know, the worst was I related to them. This little 17-year-old girl, oh, my God, you're amazing. I'm like, please get sober. You know, I've got to explore a lot of different things. I've got to have a lot of different jobs. I've got to do a lot of different service. I've been a nanny for 10 years. I never thought I was going to grow up to be a nanny. I never thought I was going to grow up to be an alcoholic either, but, you know, God laughs when you make plans, you know, and think I'd have so many tattoos. but I've gotten to do all these great things, and they just keep unfolding, and it keeps happening, and I keep taking my sponsor's suggestions. Fuck you, exercise. Like, I don't want to exercise. My sponsor's like, my last third step, we're sitting up in the dunes over Ocean Beach. And she's like, I'm going to make a suggestion. And I'm like, okay, because I'm a suggestion monster. Give me a suggestion. I'll do it, right? She's like, I think you need to get some exercise. I was like, oh, no. Maybe yoga? Oh. Guess who did yoga this morning? Oh, because I take suggestions. I don't know why this shit works, and yoga's not in the big book, but, you know, it does. But what it comes down to is that I just know better, because my best ideas had me crawling around in the dark on my hands and knees looking for cocaine in the floorboard naked, because I was too afraid to turn on the light because I didn't want my roommate to know I was using, right? Versus taking someone's suggestions, and say I'm in grad school, I work a full-time job, I live in a beautiful place out in San Francisco, and I get to go to Paris in May. I'm going to take your suggestions. Thank you.
Are there any...